You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Her Money is proudly sponsored by Edelman Financial Engines. Healthcare costs are on the rise, and taking care of our health is one of the most important moves we can make for our lives and for our finances. Make a plan for managing your healthcare costs with the help of a complimentary wealth checkup at planefe.com/hermoney.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jean Chatsky. Thanks so much for joining me today on Her Money. Navigating money issues with your family is hard. Navigating money issues with your family is even harder when you are a first-generation American. My guest today, Gigi Gonzalez, dealt with that firsthand when she realized her savings goals were at odds with her family's culture and expectations. So she started talking about it on TikTok. A few years later, she has over 200,000 followers, and she's joining us today to talk about how to overcome these sorts of money challenges with your family. Plus, in Mailbag, we talk about the best investment options for a young kid, and a listener who doesn't have much saved for retirement is wondering if she can take out a loan every so often to pay for her mortgage. But before we do any of that, let's get into some timely financial news. First up, the new magic number for retirement is evidently $1.46 million. That's up from $1.27 million a year ago, according to a study of about 4,500 people from Northwestern Mutual. Now, before you freak out about being nowhere near that number, you should know you've got a lot of company. 2023 data from the Federal Reserve says the average American has only about $87,000 saved. So what does the existence of a quote-unquote magic number really mean? First of all, there is no magic number. There is no magic number that works for everyone. I like to think of surveys like this as nudges to see where you are in terms of saving and investing regularly for your own retirement and maybe getting yourself on the right track. One way to figure out if you are on track is to use the helpful benchmarks developed by Fidelity Investments. They suggest you should have 1x your salary socked away by age 30, 3x by 40, 6x by 50, 8x by 60, and 10x by the time you retire. Whether or not you'll actually need that much, or more, or less, depends on how you, as an individual, plan to live in retirement, how long you plan to work, whether your home will be paid off, and so many other personal factors. If you're a long way from retirement, I know it's very hard to wrap your brain around this. Just think about it as a reminder that you should be trying to get to the point where you're saving and investing at least 15% of whatever it is you're making, and that can include matching dollars. Thinking about selling your home in the next few months? According to Realtor.com, the time is now, as in right now. By looking at past pricing patterns along with the amount of inventory and buyer activity, their researchers say that this warm spring week, and I can attest it is indeed warm and beautiful in my part of the Northeast, is the ideal time to sell nationwide. To break it down a bit further, here's what we know. We know market demand is high right now, with mid-April listings getting almost 23% more views than usual. This week is also boasting a 17% faster than usual selling pace. On the flip side, we've still got high interest rates, and they're making the real estate landscape more complex. Mortgage rates are continuing to hover around 6.8%. All in all, though, the prognosis is pretty good for sellers for the rest of the spring and into the summer as families look to secure homes where their kids can start school next fall. Finally, tax day was Monday, but if you missed the deadline to pay, don't panic. You've got options. If you filed already without paying, you can apply for short-term or long-term payment options online, by phone, or by mail by sending in Form 9465, and we've linked it in the show notes just in case you need it. And you'll get an immediate response of acceptance or denial in a payment plan. If you owe less than $50,000, you can typically get on a long-term payment plan and you'll have 72 months to pay Uncle Sam what you owe. If you owe more, closer to $100,000, unfortunately, your window is shorter. They are most likely going to put you on a short-term payment plan and you'll have up to 180 days to pay in full. While you'll still accrue interest and late payment penalties after April 15th, the failure to pay penalty will be cut in half under an installment agreement. And now we're going to take a quick break. Her Money is proudly sponsored by Edelman Financial Engines. Healthcare costs are on the rise, but we know that taking care of our health is one of the most important moves we can make for our lives and our finances. The good news is that with the right savings and investing strategies, you can get out ahead of unexpected healthcare costs and develop a plan that can work for you and your family no matter what life throws at you. Schedule your complimentary wealth checkup to meet with an advisor at planefe.com/hermoney. And we're back with my interview with Gigi Gonzalez. Gigi Gonzalez is an unapologetic spokesperson for a new bicultural approach to personal finance. She's also the author of a great new book. It's called Cultura and Cash: Lessons from the First Gen Mentor for Managing Finances and Cultural Expectations. Gigi's got 200,000 followers on TikTok and credits the app for helping her spread her message and grow her brand. Gigi, welcome to the show. So nice to have you here.
Jean, thank you so much for having me on. I've been a longtime Her Money podcast listener, and your show completely influenced my financial education journey. The podcast was always a safe space for me to learn, and I am so thankful for that because now I get to spread this message with other women. So thank you so much for that.
That is what it's all about, right? I mean, I think, first of all, thank you for saying that. That makes me feel really good. But part of what I've always felt is that we need more voices. We just need more voices with good information that can help people get where they need to go. And so I'm thrilled that the 200,000 people who are following you have found you on TikTok because they're learning and you are bringing them along. And that is what everybody needs.
Thank you so much. And a fun fact that I like to share too, you know, since I started my money education journey in 2019, I really started geeking out about money and learning everything I could about improving my finances to the point where my aunt started calling me Giovanna Chatsky. Because she used to watch you like back in the day on Oprah or like the Today Show. So she's always like, Giovanna Chatsky, you got to write a book on this. You're very passionate on this. So she always had that vision for me and she was always very encouraging of me doing what I'm doing now.
Oh my God. Well, tell her that is hysterical. That is really, really funny. Talk to me about TikTok. When you first started using it, was it your vision to create a personal brand or were you just going out there to share some good advice?
Not at all. Not at all. I joined TikTok in March of 2020, very much as a distraction from the pandemic. The news was so chaotic at that time. Just everything was so unstable. So it was a nice distraction. At the time, I was working in investment management. I was an investment performance measurement and reporting analyst for a large custodian bank. And I liked my job. I liked my career. I had a very clear path for upward mobility. I love the company that I work with. But on the side, I had developed this passion for financial literacy. by listening to your podcast, by reading a bunch of financial literacy books. And I decided to share this knowledge with specifically women of color in my community. At the time, I was living in Phoenix. So I started working pro bono as a volunteer with the YWCA teaching financial education. So they had the curriculum and I would facilitate a budgeting 101 workshop or investing 101 workshop. And it was great. It was a fun hobby. And again, TikTok was just a nice distraction from the pandemic. But that changed in March of 2021 when I was inspired to share these same tips that I was already sharing with my community by adding my voice to the platform on TikTok. And again, it came very naturally to me because I was already doing this in my community. I was being a volunteer for 2 years. I was also mentoring first-gen students from my alma mater. So I had this passion for empowering the younger version of me with financial education tips as well as career advocacy or learning the ropes as they're entering corporate America.
What was it that enabled you to make the leap from this job in finance that you like to being a full-time content creator?
I was kind of forced to, as I'm sure you know, the finance industry is heavily regulated. So I started posting content in March of 2021. I got really lucky and I went viral the next month, April of 2021. I gained 100,000 followers overnight. And with that large following, that's when I started getting an influx of requests for paid opportunities. Hey, can you come speak to our college about budgeting 101? We'll pay you. Do you do money coaching? What's your rate for a brand deal? We want to sponsor a video. And I'm like, oh, I was doing this for fun. I can make money off this. Okay, right? And I knew from my job, we had to get written approval for any outside paid work. And it was immediately denied because it was a legal and a reputational risk. So I very much had a fork in the road of, okay, I just stopped this fun hobby and focus on my career because, again, I have a very clear path. Or for once in my life, I take a bet on myself and see where this passion takes me. And it's been 3 years now since I took the leap.
For people who are thinking about a fork on the road that they might hit, was there ever a moment where you thought, oh, I should just go with the sure thing?
Absolutely. That was my first reaction. My first reaction when I got the denial from my job was, all right, this is where it ends. It was a fun hobby while it lasted. But I'm very thankful that I had friends and family that said, hold on, what are you doing here? There's something here. You are very passionate about this. It's all you talk about to us, right? Because again, to the point where my aunt calls me Giovanna Chatsky. So they said, you need to check this out. And I'm like, no, I work very hard on my career. I have a path. And they knew that I had savings because I had been saving aggressively for the last couple years to quit work to go on a sabbatical to travel the world. I had this very big dream of traveling the world while young for a year and returning to my corporate career. And they're like, what if you use that money to explore this new opportunity? I said, hell no, that is my like travel fund money, like my fund money, not to like build a business. And after thinking about it, yeah, and really looking inward and again, getting a lot of guidance from people that love me and encouraging me and telling me, you always play the safe road. You pick the safe major, the safe job. Now you have the financial ability to bet on yourself. Check it out. And if it doesn't work out, you can always go back to your corporate job.
Let's switch gears. Your book is really focused on first generation Americans. You have focused on helping first generation Americans. What does it mean to be a first generation American? Why is the starting line for first gen folks different from third or even second generation Americans?
Thank you for asking. Yes. So this is a term that I learned myself 3 years ago. I was always a first generation American, but I didn't know it. So first generation American is typically the first to be born in the United States to the children of immigrants. So my parents are both immigrants from Mexico. They came to California in the 90s in search of a better life for their three children. And the reason that it's important to name my unique experience as a first generation Latina in this country is because our starting line in wealth building is very different from, let's say, a family that's been here for 4 or 5 generations. First, I'll start by saying, of course, none of us get access to financial education in school, and I'm glad that there's finally some policy work that's moving the needle on that. But also, I would argue that some people who have been in this country, maybe their grandparents were the ones who immigrated here, so they aren't necessarily the children of immigrants, but maybe their great-grandparents did. By those generations being entrenched in the U.S. financial system for two or three generations, you get some institutional knowledge passed on about how the U.S. financial system works. What is a checking account? Maybe you won't know the ins and outs of the stock market, but you'll know the basics of what a credit card is and the importance of credit in the U.S. Because credit isn't something that's worldwide, right? It's very much specific to the U.S. And our parents as immigrants, if you think of the immigrant lifestyle, it's a very tough lifestyle. My family, they left our extended family to move away. They're in a new country, having to learn a new language, sometimes experiencing racism, taking jobs that pay them a very low income because they don't have the skill set, right, to get higher paying jobs. And it's hard raising a family of five with two low income jobs. So my parents' priority, instead of teaching me how to be financially savvy, their priority was just to keep the lights on, to keep food on the table. And wealth building wasn't even something that came to mind. And if anything, because of their mistrust of financial systems in their home country, like in Mexico, they don't really trust anything here either, right? They bring that mistrust here, even though our financial systems are much more regulated. And the last challenge that I would add would be that we aren't on the receiving end of generational wealth. I think the statistic that I cited in the book is that 7% of Latinos receive generational wealth compared to 30% of our white counterparts. And that does affect our money journey, right? Having to go to college and get yourself into debt because your parents didn't have a 529 for you, or for us, a big burden is having to financially support our parents in retirement.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that you said you started putting money boundaries into practice with your family. And initially, that wasn't met with a lot of love and a lot of good feelings. What happened?
Yeah, so I learned the hard way that in a Latino family, the only acceptable answer when your family asks you for help with money is yes. Anything less than yes, like a maybe or a not right now, or I don't have that much, but I can help you with this, is very much seen as disrespectful, ungrateful, and that you're leaving family behind. And I've learned through time, the reason is that the Latino culture operates as a collectivist culture where they're very family oriented, very communal, which means that money is communal. So if somebody has a financial emergency in their family, you're supposed to dip into your savings to help them out. That's what you have to do as a good family member. And the traditional personal finance books that I had read hadn't talked about any of that. So when I implemented the finance advice that I learned, there was no guidance on boundaries. So I just said, oh, I can't help you because I'm focusing on my own budget. I'm focusing on paying off my debt. And it was not good. It was not pretty with family. Yeah. So it was, I had a lot of tough times and I very much was labeled as a black sheep, even though I was just trying to be financially responsible.
So how did you come back from that? And how would you suggest that people who are trying to manage their own budget and their own responsibilities navigate it today? And I got to tell you, before you answer the question, I mean, I would be third generation. My parents were born here. Their parents were not born here. Some of them. My grandfather had 9 brothers and sisters, and one of them went to law school, and the rest of them helped pay for that. And then that brother helped take care of my grandmother when she had cancer, right? I mean, that's sort of what it was. And so your description sounds not familiar to what I've gone through in my own life, but what I've heard in stories of my family.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're living it right now.
So how did you come back from it? And how would you suggest that other people who are looking to take care of themselves and their family deal?
Right. And this is a method that I teach in the book, Cultura en Cash. It's called the Quiero y Puedo approach, which in English, it translates to I want to and I can. And this framework really helped me understand when to give to family and when to lay a boundary. So the first check is, quiero, do you want to? And it's important to first ask yourself, do you even want to provide this financial support? Because a lot of us are just instilled to say yes and be people pleasers again, even if it means digging ourselves into a hole, into debt, to help other people when we're really in no position to be helping others when our own finances are a wreck. So first it's like, do I want to? Do I want to do this because I want to show up for family, or am I being guilted into it? Am I being shamed into you're not being a good daughter, so you need to give us this money? And the reason I bring it up is because for a long time, I gave money to family out of a sense of guilt, and I felt my arm was being twisted. And that eventually led to resentment because I wasn't doing it on my own terms. So it's very important to give freely on your own terms. So that's the first check. So once you've kind of passed that check, okay, yes, I want to be here for family at this time. They need me. Perfect. I love that for you. Now ask yourself, can you? Puedes. So how are your finances looking? Do you have enough savings where if something happens to you, you're going to be okay? Because they're asking for help because they're broke. So if you deplete your savings, who's going to bail you out, right? Nobody's going to be able to help you. So it's important for my reader to just be honest with themselves, make sure that they are working on paying off their debt. You know, if they're buried in credit card debt, maybe it's not the best time to financially be supporting family. I give the example of if they're asking you for $1,000 for a medical bill, maybe say, hey, I can't contribute that, but I can help with $100, right? That's still some sort of financial support. Or if you can't contribute with money, contribute with your time or resources. Hey, I'll come over to the house and cook some meals so that you guys have an easier time while grandma's in the hospital, right? So it's about finding that bicultural approach of still wanting to take care of your individual needs, but still showing up for family when you want to.
And what does it mean to your family now that you're able to build generational wealth, to start building generational wealth?
Honestly, I don't think they understand it still. I still get bullied for not being a homeowner because to a lot of my family, that's what they see as a pinnacle of success, owning a home. So the fact that I'm 34 and still renting, they're just like, why are you wasting money on rent? And I've explained to them that it's not wasting money. It fits my lifestyle. And I'll show them my investment portfolio, which is almost at $200,000, and it doesn't register. It doesn't I know. So I just kind of have to keep trucking through. Even though they don't get it, they know that I'm able to take nice vacations, that I live in a nice apartment, that I have a nice lifestyle, but it still doesn't quite register.
We're going to talk about a different part of your family. I'm going to talk about your spouse when I come back in just a sec. But first, we are going to take a quick break. Let's talk retirement, shall we? Did you know that women are more likely to outlive our retirement savings than men are? That's why having consistent income, a paycheck for life, in addition to Social Security, can be a real game changer. That's where annuities come in. If you're not familiar with annuities, the concept is essentially that you take a chunk of money and turn it into a paycheck that you can start drawing on when you want to, next year or next decade. The ParityFlex multi-year guaranteed annuity available from Gainbridge offers an impressive 5.95% APY long-term, but it also offers flexible withdrawals for unexpected expenses. The ParityFlex multi-year guaranteed annuity can be an important part of your financial future as you work to build a retirement you love. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for important information. This is a paid endorsement.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm back with Gigi Gonzalez, author of Cultura and Cash. So Gigi, I know from TikTok that you did not check for financial compatibility when you started dating your now spouse, and that presented some challenges. What kind of challenges?
That is the biggest euphemism I've ever used, challenges. And I actually, I came up with that with my spouse. I said, hey, I'm making an ad about this and I want to be honest with my audience. We had a lot of trouble in our marriage because of this. He said, just say challenges. I'm like, all right. So yeah, we said challenges. It was tough. We did not have the money discussion probably until our 10th date. And by that point, I was already in love. So it was hard. It was hard when I found out that this person that I had fallen in love with had $60,000 in credit card debt.
Wow.
Yes. Yes. And he assured me I'm working on debt consolidation and it'll get paid off. I have a plan. In 5 years, it'll be taken care of. Only that didn't happen because he ended up switching jobs and he took a pay cut. Because his high-paying job was very stressful. So with the pay cut, he wasn't able to keep up with the big payments with his debt consolidation plan. So what made sense for him at the time was bankruptcy. And I've talked about that with my TikTok audience. I've actually had a follower that one time said, oh, like, I'm not going to take advice from you if you marry somebody who filed for bankruptcy. Yeah. And I made a clapback video, is what the kids call it, of like, he made a mistake. He knows it wasn't right. He's getting a fresh start and he's developing better habits better. You can't just write people off. I was smart enough to not get married to him until the bankruptcy was done. So we delayed getting married until then. But besides that, we've also found he was struggling implementing the financial teachings. I mean, he had the best financial education teacher, me, to help him.
Giovanna Chatsky,
exactly. But we found he wasn't able to execute, which was hard on our marriage because I'm like, okay, you filed for bankruptcy. I taught you everything you need to know about money, but you're still not building savings. You're still not investing aggressively. There's still a little debt here and there. What's going on? And we found through therapy that he had financial trauma. His parents used to argue a lot when he was a child over money. So he developed this negative association with money. Of money means arguments, people are mad. So he just dug his head in the sand and didn't want to deal with it.
And how is it now?
Much better. Much better. He's made a 180. I am very happy with our finances and I'm so proud of him.
Oh, that's fantastic. Our audience also loves hacks. And I know you've got a 3-step hack that you teach to help people improve their credit score. Will you share that?
I do. And I'm so glad I came up with this hack. I showed it to my little brother and it works. It works. When I taught it to him when he was 18. So I said, all right, Paolo, we're going to go to the bank, open up your first credit card. And I told him, this credit card is not going to be for you to use on everything. It's just going to be for you to build good credit. And he's like, how do you do that? I said, all right, we're going to pick the first step. We're going to pick one small recurring bill. I said, do you have a Netflix account? He said, no. He said, I have Amazon Prime. He's like, that's like $12 a month at the time. And I said, okay, perfect. So we're going to pick a small recurring flat bill like that Amazon Prime. We're going to charge it on this credit card. You're not going to use this credit card for anything else. You're going to use your debit card for all your other purchases while you're learning to build credit. And the second step is setting up auto pay for that credit card to be paying Amazon Prime, right? The third step is to have your bank pay that credit card on autopilot. So it's all automated. And because it's always paid on time, because automations, it helps with credit building. And because it's such a small amount that's being charged, it's still showing activity, but it's always lower than that credit utilization that you're supposed to use, right? And yeah, he listened to me. He didn't touch the credit card for anything else. And he has excellent credit now. So I'm really proud that I was able to help him because I was the oldest. I didn't have anybody to guide me. So he had his big sister to kind of light the way for him.
Amazing. I've got two younger brothers too, so I know what you're talking about. One of the other myths that you bust in your book is that you should only invest once you're debt-free. And this sort of falls into the category of trade-offs that we have to deal with all the time. How do you balance it?
Yeah, I like to tell my reader that waiting until you're debt-free is such a big mistake because you don't know how long you're going to be in debt for. I mentioned that if I would have waited to start investing until I was debt-free, it would have been until I was in my late 20s, and I would have missed out on 10 years of compound interest. And you never get that time back. So I say it's a balance. just like everything else, right? It is important to save for the future, but also to be aggressive with any high interest debt. So I give them the rule of thumb that if the interest rate is over 5%, you should probably be focusing most of your energy on paying off that debt, finding extra income to pay down the debt. And then if you have lower interest rate, then you can be more aggressive towards your investing. But it's very important to do both. Don't just fully go hard on investing and ignore your debt and vice versa.
Absolutely. And thank you for being our guest today. Where can we find you?
Sure. So if you want to learn more about my book, you can visit culturaencash.com. The book is available at all major online retailers, although I do recommend you support your local bookstore or shop at bookshop.org. I will say the book is unapologetically written for first generation Latinas, which means that they're the people that are going to get the most out of the book. And that's because I sprinkle in a little Spanglish, or I'll share some Spanish dichos that are well known in our community. But if you consider yourself an ally or somebody that works with first generation students, it would be a very helpful book for you to read to understand the unique struggles of first generation Americans. And again, you can go to culturaencash.com to learn more.
Awesome. Gigi, thanks so much for doing this. And thank your aunt for me too.
Yes. Thanks for having me on, Gene.
And we'll be right back with your mailbag.
Hey there, listeners. It's Nima Gobier. I'm the co-host of Mindshift, the podcast where we explore the future of learning and how we raise our kids.
I don't teach math. I don't teach reading. I teach people.
You'll hear from teachers, parents, researchers, and students as we uncover innovative approaches in and out of the classroom.
It holds a lot about how we want students and young people to move through the world, how we want to set them up for success.
Find Mindshift wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back for Mailbag. Catherine Tuggle is with me today. Hey, Catherine.
Hello, Jean. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, too. Always makes me feel so good when, especially when younger people, I mean, Gigi's in her early 30s, but she's been listening clearly to the podcast for a long time. And it always makes me feel so good when people say that this is where they got their financial education. I know I'm such a nerd.
No, I feel you. Every time we get reader mail from somebody who's read our book, How to Money, which you and I co-authored a couple of years ago now, which is crazy, I get so excited that not only have you found us, you have found us so young, because I think you and I and so many others come to the Her Money community at 40 or at 50, or we come into our financial power at an older age, and to see it happening to the younger women is just, it's an incredible feeling.
Yeah. No, it's great. I enjoyed that conversation. Let's dive in and see what we've got today.
Yeah, our first question comes to us from Alexandra. She writes, "Hi, Jean and team. I've been following you since the very beginning, and I wrote in a couple of times. Last time, I heard your response to my question as I was changing a diaper on my first baby. I now have two. And the question I have today is from that baby who's now almost 7. He has been part of a vaccine study and has earned $800 for his participation so far. He asked me to put that money away into our high-yield savings account, which currently earns 4.25%. Which, by the way, what? He's 7 and he's asking to put money in an HYSA?
I know. I mean, he's clearly listening too.
Okay, this is fantastic. Genius child. He recently informed me that he would like that money to go towards his first car. We still have 11 to 12 years left before he needs a car. So where should I put the money so that it's safe, makes the most money, and is ideally separate from our savings? Do you have any suggestions? Thanks for all the wisdom you and your guests share with us."
Oh my goodness. I can't picture my children at 7 having this conversation with me. Jake had a bit of a conversation when he was in 5th grade because he had a math teacher in 5th grade who taught them about credit card interest, compound interest, and he came home highly incensed that the credit card company could be charging 25% and he could only be earning 2 or 3 on the bank account. Even that would have been a lot at that point, which brings me to the question that I have about my answer. 11 to 12 years is an investable window, right? 11 to 12 years is enough time for the markets to go down and probably rebound. And yet,
you used the word safe. And although that's how the markets have performed historically, and I would generally say, look, you've got a window where you could put this money into an S&P 500 index fund or a total stock market index fund and let it grow, that word safe gives me a little bit of pause, because what if the market has taken a dip right before he wants to buy that car? And then he ends up disappointed and angry at the markets, and we've lost an investor for life. And I don't want to see that happen. And so I'm thinking high yield savings account, maybe a longer term CD could be a way to go. We've been dancing around the fact that interest rates are supposed to moderate starting perhaps later this year, but the longer the jobs numbers stay high, the less of a likelihood that we have that is actually going to happen. So I might sit down. Look, clearly he is able to understand a lot at 7 years old. I might sit down with him and explain to him that stock markets go up and go down, and that by the time he is 16 or 17, who knows if we're going to be driving or flying around in flying cars, right? So I might explain to him, look, we could put this money into a stock market account for you. Even better, because he earned this money, you could put it in a Roth IRA for him, and he could use that money for education. He could use that money to buy a first house. There's some exceptions that would allow him to get the money out. He could pull out his principal, the amount he contributed without penalty 5 years down the road, no problem whatsoever. I might think about explaining that to him and explaining to him that he could lose money along the way, but that chances are he'll probably make money, and let him make the call. If he'd rather it be safe at a steady 4-5% return, then look at CDs or look at a high yield savings account. And if he'd rather at 7 years old roll the dice a little bit, I might go Roth IRA or just a discretionary stock market portfolio. But good for you. That's great. Clearly, you're having the right kind of conversations at the dinner table.
Yes, the right education is already happening in this house. And I love everything you said, because it can be mixed and matched, right? Yeah. You don't have to have an all or nothing scenario. And if he really wants to take a little risk, like buy one share of Disney, buy one share of whatever public company he's interested in at the moment. And it could be a great way to like pave the way for him interested in the market, even if he does lose money.
Yeah, definitely. Ask him what he's following, what he's liking. Kids tend to be very prescient about these things.
True, especially this one.
Yeah.
Our next question today comes to us from Rose. She writes, "Hi, G. I watched you on TV for years. I'm so glad I found you again at Her Money. I'm 59 years old. I have a 30-year mortgage, and I have no retirement because I'm always trying to make sure I pay for all of my bills, plus house repairs, appliances, etc. So my retirement isn't really a retirement, as I only have about $40,000 saved. Terribly sad for me. My question today, is it possible for me to take out a $10,000 loan every so often and pay for my mortgage that way? Could you direct me to a formula that I could follow? If so, if I can save a little money and put it into my retirement instead of wasting a lot of money with interest and fees, then I need to start now. Thank you. I appreciate any help."
So I gotta say, Catherine, I'm not sure I exactly understand how Rose's financial life is working from this question. But the last part of it makes me think that when you talk about paying your bills, you're really talking about paying bills that have interest charges, fees associated with them. And it seems like you're living so close to the line being your paycheck that any little added expenditure is nudging you to the point where you're putting things on credit. And so, no, You can't take out a $10,000 loan and pay your mortgage that way because that's just adding additional debt. But if you would look at your entire financial picture and look at where your money is going on a paycheck-to-paycheck basis, maybe we could figure out where it's falling through the cracks. This is actually what we do in our Finance Fix program, and we just launched a version of our Finance Fix program for pre-retirees to help you go through the process before you retire to get your budget in shape. Because believe it or not, getting that budget in shape, managing that spending is one of the most important things that you can do for retirement, and you should do it about 10 years out. And so, Rose, I think you're even closer to retirement probably than 10 years out, but I want to see if we can help you perhaps push off taking Social Security so that you can maximize it. I want to see if we can help you get a better grip on your budget. And so I am going to have our team reach out to you, and I'm going to send you to Finance Fix, courtesy of me. We're going to put you in this class. I'm not going to charge you for it. I just want to see if it helps you get where you need to go. So you're going to be hearing from us, and I am going to get you a great coach for our next pre-retiree session. For anybody else, if you are interested, you can go to financefix.com, and because I'm feeling generous, I'm going to give you $100 off. Put in the code podcast, we'll set it up, and $100 off on your chosen next Finance Fix class. And by the way, people who go through this class are saving about $1,500 over the 8 weeks. So I'd pay for it.
Yeah, it pays for itself.
But Rose is not going to pay for it. We're giving it to her for free.
This is amazing. I love it. I think this is going to be so helpful for her because it's clear Rose is looking at strategy. She's trying to be strategic here with the money that she has. And I think the beautiful thing about Finance Fix is that it teaches you ways to be strategic that actually work for the long haul rather than more of the short-term like sacrifices, robbing Peter to pay Paul kind of things that we so often do.
Yeah, absolutely. So there we go. Use the code podcast to get $100 off. Thank you, Catherine.
Love it. Thanks, Jean.
If you've got any other money-related questions, we'd love to hear from you. Just send them to us by emailing mailbag@hermoney.com. Thank you so much for joining me today on Her Money. Thanks to Gonzalez, for explaining how to break free of the taboo of talking about money and creating a debt-free life. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our show at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review. We love hearing what you think. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Edelman Financial Engines. Her Money is produced by Haley Pascalides. This show is mixed and mastered by CDM Sound Studios. Our music is provided by Video Helper, and our show comes to you through Megaphone. Check out our new podcast, How She Does It, with Karen Feinerman, for intimate cocktail party style conversations with today's most talented female leaders. This podcast is also part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. You can find us and other shows like us at airwavemedia.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk soon.